everyone. Welcome to This Is Whole Life. And today we are talking about ketchup. But back to that in just a moment. This Is Whole Life happens at the Whole Life Church here in Orlando, Florida, every single week and drops into your feed on Wednesday mornings, where we discuss in a little bit further detail the messages here at Whole Life. And across from me, as always, is Melanie. To the cross, well, to my right when I stand this way, is Ken, our lead pastor. And Lucas to my left, I'm Randy.
And if you turn around, I'm behind you.
I don't think my cable's
get behind me, Satan. There you go.
Now we're in the right place. So it doesn't seem like we get through.
Did we mention Lucas? Okay.
Too many episodes that we don't get some kind of food or food. Talk in there. And this week, Ken was like, you know what? I'm going to make sure that we talk about ketchup because ketchup is one of my favorite things. And apparently, if you are outside the U.S., your ketchup stinks. Is that a fair?
That's not true in Brazil.
That was definitely the message I was trying to send out today, this last week. So
it was just everyone else's ketchup is just not as good. I think I saw.
So the funny thing is ketchup is not one of my favorite things. It's not like something I would put high on, but it's really weird the things you miss when you go away from home. Like I would never in a million years have guessed that ketchup would be on my list of things that I struggled with, but it was. So that's when I spent the year in New Zealand.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
All right. Well, before we get to the whole ketchup scenario.
Yeah.
We do have a couple text messages. This is, oh boy, what are we? I've got pictures. Let's see if the pictures make any sense after I read this. This was signed anonymously again. We had a great time at the beach, even though it was brief. Okay, so I'm trying to think of who might have been at the beach.
See, they're anonymous. They don't want you to figure out who they are.
Yeah. It's so nice to see so many gathered for a baptism and fellowship. It raised us out, but we got to explore a little before. Oh, it rained us out. Yeah. Gotcha. Before we were forced to go home. Love the AIFX with the Bible story from last week. These are a few of the highlights. This beautiful little Easter eggs, whether they were intentional or AI mishaps, I love them all. You can tell a story and show a picture, but who pays attention to the details? Does any of it matter? Oh, boy. This is some circles. All right, I have to check this out. I'll put them in the they've got these circled, and I don't have time to check on each one right now, but we'll put them in the let you guys all see them and the points they're looking at as the Discord. There we go. On the podcast, it was questioned if these miracles still happen. Culture and context was such a solid answer, and I love that. I don't think we see fire shooting from heaven, but we definitely need to hear the little small voice. There is a lady who's in the hospital currently waiting on a heart transplant. She left the church and recently had come to watch the Chosen series with the staff a few summers ago. Ken said, "You want more? Come on Saturday." And she did. She then requested her membership here at Whole Life and attends religiously. This is fire from heaven to me, but she heard a little small voice that told her to come watch a series. Context to others are a small voice, but I see the fire from heaven.
Amen. Nice.
So there you go. Man, I am so distracted right now by these what's in these pictures that they the Easter egg. So Lucas will maybe I'll
let you see. Are there some cell phones in there? Because I heard that in it was a busy week. And I want to go ahead and say something. So I asked we were on a staff retreat. Yeah. And I said, Lucas, I know this is probably not the right week to ask you this, but I would love to do like a very like an animated book of this story because I want to tell the story on Sabbath. And Lucas, to his credit, was like, yeah, I'll make it work, man. We'll do it. And so you have to know that Lucas got back, I think, late Thursday and then just cranked out on my request on Friday. So both of us looked over the slides. We made a couple adjustments that we noticed, but clearly there were a couple things that in our haste to get this project that may have slipped through a little bit there. So there was one that I think I heard about later that when they're gathered around the altar up at Mount Carmel that some people are holding cell phones. Yeah. they're videotaping, which how cool would that be?
I mean, we're not saying this was historical accuracy may or may not be complete.
So the Easter eggs were unintended, but you're welcome.
All right, so I will put these up
there. Maybe, you know.
Yeah, they've got them circled, so we'll see if we can figure out which one they're looking at. And then we had, hello again, this is Maddie Elias. Thank you so much for answering my question. Thank you for the amazing opportunity of letting me pick the first story for story time with Ken. The story I have decided on is... Okay.
All right, here we go.
Go wash in the river. Thanks again.
Go wash in the river.
That's the name and story.
Oh, nice. Okay.
So that's a good one. Little Maid.
Little Maid.
Little Maid.
Did you bring it with you today? When am I doing this, by the way? When did I agree to do this? I can't remember.
Maybe we'll put this out. Maybe let's record it later this week and we'll put it out like Friday evening. That's a nice
That would be nice.
Nice little evening story for the kiddos.
And we're having are we scanning the pictures from the book and
let's do that.
Yeah, I'm sure we can.
And then putting that in the show notes so people can just, you know.
I'll see if I can find my copy.
Is that breaking copyright laws or
probably. But in Discord.
We don't want to do that.
No, in Discord I think we'll be okay.
Okay.
I think we'll be fine.
All right.
It's just, you know.
I want to make sure we do everything above board.
Well, we'll make sure that we give proper credit. And these are just, you know, copy scans of the pages.
I think it's good advertising personally. I mean, yeah. we'll even send them to the – they must still sell those?
I don't know.
I'm pretty sure they do.
They probably do. I would be surprised if they didn't actually, but we'll see. We'll find out.
You know, though, perhaps Lucas and I can start creating a new library of new with AI-generated images and that people can find their Easter eggs.
Correct.
this is the Whole Life Easter egg version of the story.
I have some people wearing the This Is Whole Life t-shirts.
Yes, that would be
awesome. Yeah. Yeah, they're overflow t-shirts right at the as they pour water over the
– Melanie's looking on Amazon, and it looks like that you can find it for $109. Man, I didn't know I had so much money in my bookshelf. If I can sell each one of those for $109 each,
how much?
I think it's for the 5-volume set.
Oh well, that's less fun. I was hoping it was per book.
Yeah,
because I've got two sets, and for $109 a piece, I'd be happy to let go of one set.
You have how many sets?
Two.
Okay, yeah. I only have one, but I'll have to see if I can find it. Hold on, edit point here. Can you hear yourself? Are you loud?
I'm yes. Okay. And so everyone else is very loud.
Okay, let me turn this down. All of a sudden, I was like, I can't hear Melanie, and I'm like, where's the?
She's right here.
Yeah. So okay, so we'll get those scanned, and then we'll bring the book in so Ken can read it this week, and then we'll put that out Friday night as a little bonus episode. That'll be fun. Emily's room's all torn apart, but
excellent
I'm sure
selection, find by the way, Maddie.
Yeah, that's. I don't think I changed names in that story when I read it because they're all pretty.
So the interesting thing was that was the sermon I was actually going to preach last Sabbath.
What?
And we changed it out for the one that I did.
Really?
And the reason we did is because I'm doing a whole series on Elisha. Oh, I hadn't really realized I was doubling up on that. So I thought, yeah.
Because Elisha is Naaman's guy.
That's correct.
Yeah, that makes sense. All right. Well, did you know that the word ketchup likely originates from a Chinese word, katsiap, referring to a sauce made from fermented fish?
I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah. Europeans began experimenting with the recipe using ingredients like mushrooms, oysters, anchovies, and walnuts.
Wow.
Okay, then.
Okay.
They settled on tomatoes because it'd be awkward for a vegetarian.
that's probably what they weren't thinking about. But the tomato-based version became popular, obviously, in the U.S., possibly, no, for sure, originating here with the H.J. Heinz company initially using the name Ketsup, but later switched to Ketchup to distinguish itself from competitors. And then catsup and ketchup were used interchangeably, but I guess it's like Betamax and VHS, you know, ketchup one for whatever reason.
One of the best talks I ever heard on ketchup was by one of our church members, Brian Adams.
Cuts like a knife?
Brian, he's one of our church members here at Whole Life, and he was doing a talk, and he he actually spent more time on that ketchup. It was a super. It was really good.
I'll have to go back and find that
now.
It
was so good. Yeah, man. It was so good. I don't know if it's still around. We can check in with Brian and find out or not. But it was a really good talk.
Okay, and the biggest debate in the chat during second service was Maddie. Here's looking at you. Hope you've tried it. Let us know. 407-965-1607, podcast@wholelife.church. We want to know. Mayo and French fries versus ketchup or a combo?
Mayo versus ketchup? That's not even close. Not even close. Mm. No. I mean, you can do that. I mean, if you want to be weird, you're welcome to do that. And it's not like horrible, but it's not right. It's like, you know what? Oh. Just to go ahead and give an example. It's like – if you're having a haystack, Fritos are the correct chips to put
Absolutely.
On there.
Correct.
No doubt.
You can use
you
can use corn chips if you want to.
If you want to get excommunicated.
But it's not, and that's how I feel about mayonnaise.
If you're like in the wilderness and you have nothing else.
Yeah, right. I mean, if your ox is in the ditch right. and you need to, you know, get it out, then you could use a corn chip of some kind or a, you know.
Because I would take, like, even on a brat, a hot dog, I would take mayo over ketchup every time.
Wow.
Really?
Yeah. And mustard. Oh, gosh. Give me the spicy brown.
Yeah.
Yeah. But.
Now, I do like a good campfire sauce.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. For, yeah. No, I'm not. Yeah.
I'll take that.
And I like the double. Get if you take two fries, put them next together, and you can have one with mayonnaise and one with ketchup.
That's even. I mean, that's fine.
Yeah. Okay.
That's acceptable.
All right. So,
but
Maddie,
if you're like asking me if I have to pick between having ketchup for my French fries or mayonnaise.
Well, if I have to pick, I'm still taking mayo. But
I'm just curious. You know. I've been very opinionated. Lucas, what about you? What are you? If you have to pick between mayonnaise or ketchup, which one are you?
It's ketchup for me.
Melanie?
Well, yeah.
Well, on French fries specifically?
Yeah.
Okay, it's ketchup. But I do eat mayonnaise on my broccoli.
Oh, yeah.
Whoa, wait. Broccoli?
That's really good.
It's very tasty.
It is.
What? Mayonnaise on broccoli?
Yeah,
it's good.
I mean, I'm not.
She's correct. You would not. Okay. You would not want to put ketchup on broccoli.
No.
But mayonnaise on broccoli.
Mayonnaise, very good.
I mean, broccoli.
So do you do? Is it mayonnaise or do you do
Miracle Whip?
Miracle Whip.
Oh, actually, it's that veggie-naise.
That's
my favorite.
That's good.
Okay,
I like that.
Veggie-naise?
Or whatever, however you pronounce it. I don't know.
So as long as we're asking important questions.
Yeah.
Ketchup on a haystack?
Oh, goodness, no.
Mm-mm.
Lucas?
I've done it before. I'm
not asking whether you've done it. Almost every Adventist
one time in college.
It once. But, no. Would you willingly do it? Would you like, okay, I'm making a haystack. There's ketchup on the table. Yeah, I'm going to put it on there.
Depending on the day, yes.
Welcome,
wow. Okay.
Welcome, passengers of the 205 from Desecration Station. Oh my!
I knew that Lucas had some flaw. And here it is.
There it is. Yeah. No.
No, I would never putting ketchup on a haystack is ruinous.
Green olives?
Yes.
Oh yeah.
100%.
Black olives, green olives, tomatoes, sour cream,
onion.
See, I'm not a crunchy onion person.
Sour cream is mandatory.
No, I will tell you, if you take mayonnaise and you put some of that Cholula sauce in it and mix it up, it makes a really nice haystack sauce.
That's true. Melanie, we've been over at her house and tried that out, and she's right. It was very good.
I grew up in the, maybe this is a Midwest thing, Western salad dressing. That's a big haystack thing in the
Western?
Like Western salad dressing.
I don't even know what that is.
I don't either, really.
But what is it?
Nobody knows.
I don't know. It's got the big steers. They're not antlers.
I've seen like Catalina.
Yeah, Catalina.
Is it like that?
Maybe. I don't know.
Oh.
But I'm just like salad dressing of any kind.
My wife really believes in honey mustard on haystacks.
Wow.
I love honey mustard.
I'm not a honey mustard
person. Honey mustard's good on just about anything.
Yeah.
Honey mustard on broccoli in the trash. That's where that belongs, both of them. But that's just me. No, my wife makes a baked broccoli with Parmesan that I like pretty well. So that's not – it's
– Sounds good.
It's okay. I mean, if you have to eat something green, then
– I fear that's where you're going with that.
Then you may as well put something on it, hope that it go down easy. Maybe the ketchup – no, you said mayo.
Yes.
Does that help it slide down easier? You can just that just.
Does that work with like just a spoonful of mayo makes the broccoli go down? Yeah.
And if you have two, you're eating with Freud at the other side of the table.
Yeah, Lucas, I think you need to do some sampling here. This could come back to haunt you.
We're getting ready. We're getting ready for the 100th, our centennial upcoming. We're writing new music, and we have to start putting some lyrics out.
If I'm Just Not Ken isn't haunting me, then I don't think you could go ahead and do what you want with this one.
That's awesome.
I can't. Who did I run into the other day? I ran into somebody I had was like meeting for the first time, and they're like, "Oh yeah, I watched your Just Ken video." Like,
good way to start.
Good. That's what I want to be known for.
Did you watch that just before you came, or have you?
The part that I did like about it was like, somebody was like, I think the way it came up was somebody said to them, jokingly, like, "Oh, you can just call him Ken." And he said, "I have been. I know this because
I watched the video." That's awesome. Well, that's when you really feel good about your advertising dollars, when you've invested in something that lets people know, and then they actually
pays
do
off.
It. Yeah, that's it was totally worth it. So we're talking this week, and the whole catch up works into Ken is in New Zealand. He's thinking, I need Taco Bell, everything, and ketchup. And a good friend of his shows up with a gallon bag of ketchup, and it is like winning the lottery.
Yep.
And it's like, don't waste a drop. Nope. We're going to plan these meals ahead. When we rip that thing open, we're going to be pulling it. Our hands are going to be washed, and the outside of that's going to be washed so that we can pull it all down, make sure it
just
all.
Just put your mouth on the packet and just.
Or cut the end off and make sure that every little bit gets in. Yeah. And then he contrasts this with a story that, man, I mean, I'm sure I've read it before in the Bible going through, but I'm pretty sure this is the first sermon I've heard on it. And I guess
you know, Randy, I just live to do sermons that you say this is the first time I've heard this.
No,
the best thing for me would be to be able to preach sermons that nobody has ever heard before.
Every week.
Because, every
that
week.
That sounds like a sermon series to me.
Stories you've never heard before.
Yeah.
Look, well, let's do it.
There's a handful.
I guess we can do the Book of Judges. That will.
How many people have
probably need to have children's church every Sabbath if we're going to do that.
But the
Song of Solomon, I guess we can do that.
Yeah.
But David's 30, which the Bible says was actually 37 in all.
Yeah.
But also the three, you know, they do this marathon to Bethlehem and back, basically in the dark. They break through the Philistine lines. So breakthrough would make it seem like they actually had to fight to get in and out. Is that accurate? It doesn't really say.
The Bible doesn't give us a lot of details, but yes, it would. I mean, if you think that there's a whole enemy garrison inside this town.
And Bethlehem's
you know,
not that
generally,
big.
Generally, armies leave pickets out. They have their lines. It feels pretty likely that they – I mean, and the fact that David later on says this is as precious as the blood, I mean, it clearly what they did was incredibly dangerous.
Yeah.
Whether they had to fight or not, the Bible doesn't explicitly say, but there sure seems like the implication that they did.
And I thought the part that you had to leave out was worth revisiting, because the Jashobeam?
Yeah.
The Hakmonite – who was the leader of the three, Hakmonite, that's like the best like group of people ever. And maybe this is why he's so cool. He's the leader of the three mightiest warriors among David's men. He once used his spear to kill 800 enemy warriors in a single battle.
Yeah.
I mean, if that's true, come on. I want to be Jashobeam or Jashobeam the Hakmonite, because that's pretty cool. And then the next one is Eliezer. Who he and David stood together against the Philistines when the entire Israelite army had fled. So it's like, hey, boss, and Eliezer, we're out because this isn't looking good. He killed Philistines until his hand was too tired to lift his sword, and the Lord gave him a great victory that day. I mean, this is like – he's the number two guy, but he stayed when everyone else left until his hand was too tired to lift his sword. Shammah. One time the Philistines gathered at Lehi, L-E-H-I, I'm not sure, and attacked the Israelites in a field full of lentils. Now, that's just bad. That's bad right there, because who wants to be anywhere near lentils? Oh, man. The
mayo, maybe.
Maybe that's why the other ones, maybe the other guys were there, and that's why the army fled, because they were in a full field of lentils. That's probably it. I think these verses got messed up. Anyway, Israelite army fled again, but Shammah held his ground in the middle of the field of lentils and beat back the Philistines. So the Lord brought about a great victory in a field of lentils. Come on, people. That's dedication right there. Yeah. And that's the top three.
Yeah.
But the thing I thought was weird was comparing, and maybe in this, I think we have a question about this, don't we? About the confusing part. So let's read the question, because I also had this, like, comparing the water to the blood. No one died. There was no bloodshed, at least in this little excursion. Overall, safe mission. But
I don't have that one here. I have this one.
Was that the one about the? Someone had made a comment in the chat that they were a little lost in the message, and I guess maybe that. And I felt like that was kind of a part where the water to blood. I didn't totally get the connection, even though you made many attempts, and they were probably really, really solid, because Melanie's over here going,
yeah. I really appreciate the truth being told here.
Because so. Melanie was like, she's over here shaking. Yeah, it was pretty clear. And so, but
I didn't say that.
No, but it looked like you were.
I was nodding in my participation in the conversation.
Oh, gotcha. But it probably was, or you'd have said something, I would have assumed. So that's also. Well,
so what you're wanting is for me to take a moment to try to make it a little bit more clear.
Water. Yeah. The water, the blood. The tie-in.
So in the passage, David says, this water is as precious as the blood of the men who brought it to me, basically. And so there is a theory that says that David was comparing that water to his men's blood. He basically says this water symbolizes their blood. In the same way that Jesus might say that this cup, when you drink the wine from this cup, it is my blood spilled for you. And in the same way, David is saying the water that you brought me is the same as your blood. And in the way that I wouldn't drink blood, I'm not going to drink this water because it's sacred. It's sacred that way. Jewish people believed that your life was in the blood, and so Jewish people were prohibited from eating the blood from animals. So that's where you get your kosher food from. The blood needs to be drained completely out, or as completely as possible out of meat before it can be eaten. And so when David says that this water that you brought to me is as precious as your blood, he's saying, I'm looking at this water and I don't see water. I see your blood. I see that you gave your life. You put your life on the line by going and trying to get this water for me. And by the way, who would I be to ask your life for a glass of water that I don't have to have? And so how disrespectful would it be for me to drink your blood? I won't do it. It's your blood only belongs to God. And that's why I'm going to pour it out on the ground where only God can receive it.
So it wasn't really about them. It wasn't about the act of going to get the water. Or yes.
Why don't you expand that out for me, what you mean by that?
Well, I mean that the water was – I mean I get the analogy between the blood and the water. But was it because that they – it was just because what they risked?
Yes.
Made him feel right. That way about it? Like,
because David had just made an offhanded comment, as often some of us will do. Well, you'll be like, oh, man, wouldn't it be great? I mean, if you've ever been hungry or you've been thirsty, oh, man, what would I give for a, you know, whatever your beverage of choice or your, you know, your food? When when you're hungry, people sit around and they talk about food, right? Yep. And you're like, oh man, I'd love, this is what I'd love to have. I love that. And so David's super thirsty. His hometown is now a part of the Philistine camp. It's a garrison for the Philistines. So he's homesick. He can't go home, and he's thirsty. And his mind, in his thirst, he goes, man, it would be great if I could have just a drink from that great water from the well at the gate in Jerusalem. That would be amazing to have a glass of water from there right now. Just says it. He's not expecting anything. Nobody's expecting anything to happen. He goes to bed not giving a second thought. He wakes up in the morning, and his boys are there with this, with a canteen or whatever filled with, and go, hey, we went last night. We literally ran a marathon. We went 13 miles one way, 13 miles back.
Had a kerfuffle at
we went to your hometown. Who knows? Maybe they're scratched up. Maybe they're a little bit worse for the wear. They hand him the water, and he's just overcome. He's like, oh, I did not want you to go. I mean, have you ever had somebody do something for you that was that you felt bad that they did it for you? You're like, oh no, that's too much. That's like, that cost you way too much. I feel horrible that you went and did that for me. I mean, I'm honored, but that was not, no, I would never, that's just too much. And that's what David is like, oh, I would never want you to give your life up so that I can have a drink of water from my favorite well. I was just saying that, and I look at this water and I'm overcome by the, I think of what could have happened to you. You could have been killed, all three of you. And if I could have lost all three of you over a glass of water, I can't drink this water. It's your blood. I mean, it's your life. Who am I to ask for your life in that kind of way? And so in the theory that I like best, David looks at that water and says, this is your blood. This is your blood. And in the same way I wouldn't drink your blood, I'm not going to drink this water because it's sacred. It belongs to God. And I'm going to pour it out here on the ground as an offering to God. Because that's the way that they would do blood offerings. Like if they would take the blood from an animal and they would pour it out on the ground by the altar.
Because you sprinkled the altar, but then you poured the rest.
You would take the remainder of it and you would pour it at the base of the altar on the ground.
So how does that work with the drink offering? Again, I'm sure I've read about this before, but I was trying to put together
how drink, that. Drink offerings would usually either be olive oil or they would be grape juice, and they would also be poured on the ground.
Okay. In what context?
In the context of returning it to God.
So this would come with the animal sacrifices? Is the drink sacrifice, was that a separate?
So there's animal sacrifices. There were grain sacrifices. People right. bring grain. And then there were also drink, what were called drink offerings that were
brought. That one just stuck me like, I don't remember that one before.
It's not one that's really talked about a lot in the Bible. You don't see it. I mean, we tend to focus in on the animal sacrifice probably a little bit more when we think about the sanctuary service. But it is very much, I mean, you read through, it's very much a part of the Jewish sanctuary system and the way that things were done. It was very common. And the thing that I think is, to me, really notable about those drink offerings is that unlike the grain offering, unlike the meat offerings, the priest didn't keep a portion of it. 100% of these drink offerings
poured
out. 100% of it. None of it was
because
was
they retained. Ate part of the other offering, right?
They would.
That was how they were. Yeah. Okay. And that one, and maybe that was just the part that I wasn't sure about, along with the blood. And so I was like, well, at least someone out there, maybe it's you, mysterious writer, that maybe we were confused together this week.
I imagine there were a number of people. I don't, as clear as I want to be, I'll be the first one to admit that it's not always, I don't always hit that bar. And so I can totally understand why it would have maybe felt a little confusing. What was going on there?
Well, it just seemed like there were things that were like together, the drink. I mean, it makes sense. And so you're following, you're like, but do I understand? Do I understand what that means? Or am I missing part of the story, which everyone else is getting? And I hate it when that happens because it's.
So now we can ask Melanie what her take is.
Yeah. Can you confirm or deny any plausible?
I can confirm that that's a theory. I don't think anybody really truly knows why David poured the water out on the ground. I think you.
Theories? What do you have? Do you have another one?
No, I mean, I don't have any other theories other than he was just out of gratitude pouring it on the ground. But yeah, I don't. I mean, there's it's a little tenuous, but it's it makes more sense than anything else.
Does it just seem like maybe it doesn't make as much sense to us now? Where like, well, why we can serve water around here, bro? And after all the work,
definitely it's a theory. I love that theory though, because it really, to me, it meshes up with a lot of other things that are going on in the Bible, from drink offerings to the life being considered to be in the blood. And so when David says this water is as precious as the blood of the men who brought it to me, for me, there's a lot of connection in there. And it actually makes it a little bit more understandable why David would take something that had been, that these three men had gone and gotten at great risk to their own life, why he wouldn't just take at least a sip of it.
Because,
you know, like I said in the sermon, I could see, you know, maybe drink half of it and then pour the other half out as an offering, right? But it would make sense that if you're viewing it as blood, you're not going to even take a sip of it. If you're viewing it as a drink offering, you can't take a sip of it. All of it has to be poured out. And it makes sense to me that his men, and it's really clear that David's, the warriors that followed David had a lot of respect for him. They followed him. And they followed him through a lot of difficult times, and you see them following him throughout his entire life. And it seems to me that if he'd done something that disrespectful, what would seem disrespectful to take a, you know, water that somebody had gone to great lengths to get. I mean, if you've ever been given a gift that you're like, "Ooh, that's too much," but usually you're like, "But I'll go ahead and hang on to it because I don't want to be rude."
Right.
And, I mean, it feels like a lot, but if you know you went to a lot of effort to do this, I don't want to disrespect you. And so I just feel like those men must have felt respected and seen by what he did, as opposed to disrespected and unseen by what he did. Otherwise, why would they remain so loyal to him through the years? And why would they include that story? Clearly, when this story is told, it's told at the end of it's at the end of 2 Samuel. David is actually on his deathbed, and they're giving and they're like, and these are the people that followed him during his life, and they're the 30, and then they're the 3, and these were his mighty men. And so they're telling you a story that must have had they pick one story to tell, and clearly these men have followed David for a long time, so there's probably a lot of different stories they could have picked from. This is the story they pick. Why do they pick that story? Why is that the significant story? I think, one, because it proves the loyalty of the three, how loyal they are to him, that there's just a simple wish like that they're willing to give their lives for. So I think it proves that. But I also think that if it were a story that besmirched David's good name, they wouldn't have put it in. I don't think they would have included a story that made David look bad, because 2 Samuel is not in the business of making David look horrible.
Well, David
they make
did.
Him look human.
Yeah.
But generally, seems to me that that story was put there.
That wouldn't have been the time or the place. Yeah. He did enough of that of himself to do it early on. They wouldn't need to revisit, right?
Yeah.
Can you imagine?
It's interesting. It's actually in 2 Samuel and Chronicles. Both places record it, which that's always a fascinating thing when you have two different records that tell the same story. It's that there are people who felt like that was important enough to make sure you carried that part over too.
So do we know who wrote both of those books?
We have no idea.
No idea. So,
well, I mean, I guess we have theories.
Theories and
on that.
There's a theory for everything.
Well, as we are learning, it would have been weird though to me to be one of the three who's like, "Dude, let's do it." And he's, I mean, the look on his face, the look on his face when he takes that first sip is going to be amazing. And then he's going to be like, "Guys, This is the best gift anyone has ever given the king. Thanks.
And David isn't king in trouble. Yet. And David's probably not king yet when he receives this.
And you're in trouble, by the way, for going and doing this. And then to have it turn out this way, that's a totally different way to think about it. But I guess that's the point. You mentioned two people towards the end of the message. Albert, was it Camus? Camus?
Camus.
Camus?
Camus.
Having a chance to be better. And Alex.
Alexis de Tocqueville?
That guy. I wasn't even going to go there because I didn't phonetically put it out so where I could get it right. So I was like, Melanie's here and Ken's here. They can get it there.
Mostly Melanie's here.
No, you just get to hear it in stereo because you see it at the same time.
Well, Melanie had to tell me multiple times how to say Camus, and I don't think I got right.
That's right. You guys were here. You were over there sitting in the chair. That's right. I was like, what's he asking her again? I couldn't catch it, but now that makes perfect sense.
Albert Camus.
I was going to say.
Albert Camus, please stand up.
Please stand up. Please stand up. But, you know, the America's ability to repair her faults, and you asked if, you know, are we repairers or are we the ones that are tearing things down in maybe in all parts of our life. But I really liked the way that landed because I feel like that's kind of how we approach things here at Whole Life, and to, you know, to worship, to celebrate, to allow people to learn and understand at their pace of who God really is, which, I mean, that really kind of defines how we lead into having a chance to be better, right? Is if we're able to be allowed to make that journey. And so I thought the way we wrapped it up was really, really good. Even though I was still trying to think through the other parts of the other parts of it, it really.
So there are really two sermons there for you, right?
It really was. It really was. I mean, I'll be the first to admit that, you know, many times you just like, you follow along and you go, yeah, that's good. Like, oh, I like this or I like that. But when you're a little confused, but then at the end, it kind of all came together. But I just wanted to make sure that if you were listening and you were one of the people like me who for a while and until we just talked about it was still a little concerned or
– a little hazy.
A little hazy. Yeah, I like hazy. That's good. That was definitely – hazy is a good one to try to figure that one out. But really giving that approach that, you know, the desire is there to be better and to do better and for ourselves, for our church community – and for our community in general to just be better, whatever that means for each person, and being allowed to do that is such a foundational piece of what we really try to do here. Whether we're always successful as much as we would like to be is probably, well, you do the best that you can, how you can, when you can. But the fact that it's a cognizant choice to allow that and to celebrate that makes a big deal for me. So, Lucas, did we have questions?
Yeah, we got two here.
We did have one, I think, we asked during the message, but I think Ken's message really had already kind of asked that one, but that was the only one we really had, I think, during the message. So,
yeah, so this one is from Carl's. Question that I have, how can we continue to give back to God in the midst of discouragement and depression?
Give back? Is that what it said? I'm sorry.
Yeah, give back to God.
How can we give back to God in the midst of discouragement and depression?
Yes.
I think it's important to determine what it is that God actually wants. Because I think that there's pressure that we put on ourselves to perform in certain ways as Christians, and when we go through a period of darkness or discouragement or depression, we feel that pressure that there's still this performance that's required of us. And I think sometimes it's okay to just rest and sit and recover and let God heal you without feeling like you have to perform some sort of act of giving back to God.
Just go back to Ecclesiastes. There's a time and a place for everything, right? And there's a time to heal. And sometimes when you're feeling deep depression and disappointment in your life, it's a time where God, the gift to give back to God is to take care of yourself. And that is the gift that God needs you to give to yourself, is to take some time to heal and to recover, you know. I think that now that I've been going to the gym a little bit more often, I'm just reminded of how I need my recovery days. I think maybe when I was a little younger, I took a little less time, but man, now I need a couple days in between, you know. It doesn't mean I don't do some cardio or whatever, but on those other days, but it does mean that there's just days where I really need to stop and recover. And I think that sometimes we have this expectation that God has us going with no stop. And that's not really what I see out of biblical examples. We were talking about Elijah 2 weeks ago, right? Mm-hmm. Elijah goes, talk about depressed, talk about disappointed. I mean, has this awesome moment on top of Mount Carmel. And the next thing you know, he's in the desert and God doesn't really ask anything of him. He's out by this broom tree for several days and God asks nothing of him there. He just feeds him. He sends an angel and takes care of him and feeds him and asks him to do absolutely nothing. And then after he's been able to rest a bit, he says, all right, I need you to get up now and journey on to Mount Sinai, where we'll have a more in-depth chat. And so again, to the point, I think there is a time to be grateful and to recognize God. And I think there's also times when we're in the midst of depression where we just need to say, you know what? I am not feeling good right now. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I am hurting. And I'm not necessarily wanting to wallow in it, but I'm also not wanting to deny that this is the reality of the life of where I'm at in life. And I am going to take some time for self-reflection, for some self-healing before I jump right back into the fray.
Yeah. Or maybe therapeutic healing or even medication or whatever it is that you need to take care of yourself.
Yep.
Permission. I like that.
Yeah, and a second one here. How to uplift others when feeling hopeless yourself?
Yeah.
And maybe going back to the last question, maybe when you're feeling down, that, you know, maybe that's, you know, we all have the realities of life. You know, when I'm feeling down, there are days where I'll be feeling down, and I do have a responsibility in my professional life to be there to lift other people up. And sometimes there's moments where I do have to, you know, try to be uplifting when I'm not really feeling it. But there's other times where I recognize that I have to stop, take some vacation time, and recharge before I'm going to be able to really be at my best and be able to give. You know, it's a difficult question to say, well, how do you give back when you're not feeling it? And, you know, the best thing I can tell you is we come from a culture in the United States that puts a really low value on self-analysis and on accepting, you know, we're a pull yourself up by your bootstraps. That's the kind of, you know, the American way is like, I don't want to hear your whining. I don't want to hear you. I don't want to hear any of that. I want you just to, you know, put on your big kid pants and move on. And I think, again, there's a time and a place for everything. There's sometimes, you know, if your life is in danger where you need to go ahead and do what you need to do, whether you feel like it or not, or if somebody else's life is in danger, you need to. But there's also a time where it's really important for us just to be introspective and say, this is how I am feeling. Mm, yeah. And stuffing it down is actually creating more pain, and it's actually not allowing me to heal. And it's actually going to get in the way of me being the best I can be for others, because I'm not taking care of myself. Right now, I'm in a small community that reads or listens to books, and I'm listening to a book right now that talks an awful lot about this. It's an interesting book. As I always like to say, I'm not sure I'm ready to fully endorse the book and say you need to listen. I agree with everything in it, but there's a lot there that's made me think a lot. And it's called The Myth of Normal by Gabor Mate, I think is its last name is spelled M-A-T and then an E with the little, what is it that you put over top of an E? What's that called? I don't know. Anyway.
So, wait, which one?
I don't know. I don't know. Anyway, but his name is Gabor Mate, and he wrote The Myth of Normal. And, you know, one of the arguments he makes is that we as a society, we tend to shame ourselves a lot. I shouldn't be feeling this way. I shouldn't. Well, you do feel that way.
Yeah.
And we often will tell people, oh, just snap out of it. You have so much to be thankful for. You live in the United States. You've got air conditioning. You've got a house. You've got a car. You know, well, maybe a little introspection, a little bit of time being like, well, hey, why am I feeling this way? Instead of judging that I'm feeling this way, why am I feeling this way? Yeah. What's going on? Those things can be very healing and bring about a lot of a lot more peace and stability into your life rather than this, I shouldn't be feeling this. I need to quit doing that. I'm going to just try harder not to, you know, not to feel the pain that I'm feeling. It's interesting that with our psychic wounds, we'll do that. We all understand with our physical wounds that that doesn't work. You know, if you've been stabbed, just saying, I'm just going to keep on doing what I've been doing doesn't fix the problem. You got to go figure out what to do. You know, you need to go to an emergency room. You need to get out of the way of the person that's stabbing you. These are all things. And yet with our psychic wounds, we tend to say, oh no, just stay where you're at. You don't go see a professional. Don't do that. You know, it's just toughen up, you know, you'll be fine. And we all know that our physical wounds don't heal that way. And it's interesting that we somehow think that our psychic wounds do. And so, you know, I just want to encourage you, if you're listening, if you're suffering right now, if you're going through depression, you're hurting, take the time to actually invest in yourself. And instead of blaming yourself for where you're at, figure out how you can love on yourself and get and find and look for the healing, look for resources for people that people can put out there for you that work for you. And I think it's an interesting thing. Again, there's all kinds of different ways to heal. Lots of different things, and there's things that work for me that won't work for you. And so study and figure out what works for you and in your process of things.
Well, plus I think if you want to be an authentic person, then you live authentically. And sometimes that means naming whatever situation
whatever
you're in.
It is, yeah.
And if you are someone, you know, who is a Christian and you feel a responsibility to the people around you to be buoyant when you're feeling hopeless, and so you kind of try to smear some cheer on top of that, you know, that looks like denial to everybody else.
Yeah.
I think honesty is just as important as being uplifting.
There's that analogy that when you're in a plane and if the oxygen masks fell, like the instructions is for you to put the mask on yourself first. So I think it's the same on our personal lives.
I think you can also lift someone else up by being willing to be a little vulnerable if you have that ability to share what's happening in your life that's causing the pain, if you know what that is. And just having someone listen. And so if you don't have someone that you have near enough to you that you would trust, you know, don't forget there's Stephen ministers here at the church that can and are more than willing and ready to listen and just be the person that can bounce, you know, let you bounce things off of them and let them listen and just be there to be with you in that moment. Sometimes that is lifting. That is, you know, for the person that's putting that time in, that is lifting them up. That's giving, you know, you're putting your trust and your faith in them, and they're getting the same. They're getting the benefit of it on the other side too. And, so that is a big deal.
And it doesn't cost anything.
Right. Exactly.
Helpful to know that there are, you know, you don't have to pay big money to have somebody walk alongside you.
What is I'll put the link in the show notes. I think it's wholelife.church/Stephen Ministries, I believe is what it is. And we'll make sure, because I never remember if we went plural or the singular. So I'm always like, I think the S is in the wrong spot, but it will be in the show notes and it will also be in the Discord. Also, for those of you that may have gone to the Discord before, there was an issue with the way they did their linking system before. If you go there now, it is a permanent link that will never go astray again, I promise. So they've made some changes there. So swipe up in today's show notes. And as of 2 weeks ago, I believe it was, that will be the permanent link. So you can join, you can share that link with other people and they'll be able to get in. Lucas, you've got it pulled up. What is it?
It's Stephen Ministries.
Stephen Ministries. S-T-E-P-H-E-N.
Yes, correct.
M-I-N-I-S-T-R-I-E-S.
Yes, sir.
There you go. All right. What do we have? We got 2 weeks left? Three.
We have three.
Three left. Mm-hmm. And then what's after three? What's our next one?
Then we are going to have a sermon from new addition to our community, Steve Carlson.
Oh, yeah. Greg. Yeah. All right. Can't wait for that.
You guys.
We love you, Greg. And then that brings us into fall.
Yeah.
That's crazy. I don't even know. I don't even know where this year has gone to. This has been like the fastest year in history. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure.
Gone quick.
Yeah. It has gone quick. Okay. Well, I guess that's it for this week. Just one more time. Friday night. Watch your feed for the little bonus episode. It's going to be Go Wash in the River.
Yeah.
In the Little Red Book. And it'll be Ken. Story time with Ken. I love this. Well, we're going to have to expand this somehow. I don't know what the reading material or subject matter. So if you have some ideas, but I'm like,
We talked a long time ago about doing a, just Bible stories.
Yeah.
Love it.
So maybe
we'll have to think about that.
Maybe it'll have to be a three-part, like we start with the Little Red Book so that the kids can get a jump. And then we do something in the middle for the next group. And then finish it with that. And then, I think we should all have to read some stories. Like Story Time with Melanie, Story Time with Lucas, Story Time with Randy, Ken. I like this.
Okay.
All right.
Let's figure it out. Okay. Well, that's it. And Maddie, thank you because, we've talked about it before, but this brought it all back in. So I hope on Friday night you are listening and enjoy your special story. That's going to do it for this week, guys. Thanks for listening. Have a great week.